Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Ghost checking in here. Going to talk about UFC on ESPN 54, which took place in Atlantic City, New Jersey on Saturday night. It was a late night, folks. Oh my gosh, being on a later time zone than the Pacific time zone, it has kicked my butt a few times. 14 fights, but, you know, can't complain. Love the job. And we're going to love discussing some of these big, big fights from that fight card with you. We also got a couple guests lined up. Linton Vassell, who's going to be fighting at PFL 1 2024. Their regular season is getting ready to start. He's a former title contender and a title challenger in the heavyweight division over at Bellator. His fight versus Ryan Bader didn't happen last year. I think it was going to be Bellator 300 or something like that. He got COVID. So we're gonna talk to him and Liz Carmouche as well, who's the actual Bellator flyweight champion. She's not in the Bellator champion series. She's also part of the regular season. So we'll catch up with both of them. We'll talk about the latest news and unpack that Atlantic City card. We'll be right back to start the show. All right, Goes. It's nice to see fans, you know, like a lot of fans in an arena cheering these fighters on. I don't want to steal the thunder of Ariel Helwani. He did something on this last week, and something we've all felt, which is, guys, we get it. The Apex is convenient. It's nice. It's a fallback, but still, like, getting the UFC out into the arenas is the way to go. I thought the Atlantic City card, even though it started kind of late and even though it was going against March Madness, it still was a fun watch.
I'd have to agree with that. It's always cool to just be able to look into that crowd and see people cheering for their fighters and all that. It's something that kind of snuck up on us and just went away. And as much as the Apex cards can be entertaining and convenient, they're good, but just not all the time. It's just refreshing. Back when the WEC, when they had first purchased it, you know, the WEC kind of stepped up their game a little bit, where they were constantly hard rock. They would start going into maybe smaller arenas, but they would travel a little bit more, and you just get more, I don't know, you feel like it's more important when it goes down like that. And I enjoyed that part of it. The card itself, I'll be honest with you, it was dragging.
Yeah, it was. This was only the second time since last year's Austin card. I don't know if you remember that one. It was in late 2023, and it was Dariush against Sarukian. So you obviously remember Dariush losing that fight. Jalen Turner and Bobby Green, that was a vicious fight, vicious ending. Figueiredo gave Rob Font a loss, and that was him debuting bantamweight. So since then, the only other fight night goes was the one in Mexico. And yeah, man, like, just get it out to more of these places, you know what I'm saying? And yeah, it did drag on. I think it wound up being 13 fights because one of them, the Melissa Gatto fight, fell off. Mm-hmm. But let's get to the fights. In the main event, Aaron Blanchfield was favored over Manon Fiorot, like minus 175, the comeback plus 145. Blanchfield had been pretty destructive, meaning she could just take you down and wallop you on the ground or go for a submission. And, dude, she couldn't even get the fight to the ground. Like, Manon Fiorot did a great job in preparing for Aaron Blanchfield. Not only was she able to stuff takedowns, she was able to, like, kind of almost she would stick and move, but a lot of times she looked like a matador, the way she would just swat her away. And you could just see Erin Blanchfield's face. She was getting frustrated. I think part of her was like, okay, well, let's kickbox. Let's see what's up then. And she saw what was up pretty quickly. Manon Fioron had a bigger reach, more length on her. She was just faster, and she's just a more polished striker. And so it was basically rinse and repeat for five rounds. I think all the scores are 50-45.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I don't want to shit on Blanchfield because you're right. The takedowns weren't working, so she did decide to strike. And when she did, occasionally she would land a good shot, but she took too many. And it was kind of the same punches over and over that were connecting on her. And so what it showed me was she kind of didn't have a plan B.
Right.
What I will give her props for is I want to say Blanchfield was, okay. I think in round four or something like that, there was a time where she really came out and like said, hey, enough. I'm going to really push her. And she started striking with her. And it wasn't bad. You could tell maybe she had cautions a little bit about conserving her energy. But the thing is, her attack was very like, yeah, it's going to sound mean, man, but like Michael Myers or Frankenstein, like, you know, they're just going to come right at you. And as long as you step to the right or the left and run the other way, you're going to get out. And her attack was just so predictable that I think Manon Fioron, once she figured it out, she was like, I could do this all day, you know, and maybe she could have put her foot on the gas a little bit more, but I thought with everything on the line and all that, it was sufficient, especially considering Blanchfield is a tough competitor and a good name. But there was something about the fight that where Erin Blanchfield never really made you feel like she was in it. And because of that, it was just a long fight.
Well, you know, we turn on our staff picks usually like 5 or 6 days before, and we have a chance to switch them throughout the week. But it was only on Saturday when I thought, you know, I think Fioron's got a better chance, and I've been dismissing her because I started watching her and Rose again. And I keep forgetting just how good Rose is, whether she's a strawweight or flyweight. She's just really, really a technical fighter. But Manon Fioron, like I say, she did well against Rose. And so I, last minute, was able to bet a little bit on Fioron. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty happy about that it was unfolding the way it was. It might have cost me on staff picks, but last year I was in first place for like the first 4 months of the year. This year I'm 20 picks behind already.
20?
Yeah, I'm way down there, man. I don't know what the hell I did early on, because I haven't done anything different from last year, but I'm just not doing good at all. Either that or Mike Bond's on fire. I think he's leading the way. Even Nolan King, who won it last year, he's like four places ahead of me, and there's like, what, 11 or 12 of us that do this? So all I can say is Fioron did what was necessary. Not getting the finish, though. I wonder if that'll cost her, because remember, we have a series where Grasso is 1-1, she's drawn, but she hasn't lost. And if Valentina wins, you got 1-1-1. And the UFC loves them. You know, they love to run it back if it benefits them, right? So if something huge is coming up in Mexico, and with Yair kind of out of the picture a little bit, he's had back-to-back losses, if I'm not mistaken. Brandon on a hiatus. It may be Grasso leading the charge, you know what I'm saying? So we'll have to watch that. Now, Fioron could have done a better job by going out there, finishing, and connecting with the crowd somehow. But that crowd was A, tired, B, kind of bored.
Yeah, a little bit. They were booing certain parts of fights that I didn't think were necessarily like in boo range. Like the Chidi and Jaquani fight, it wasn't the greatest fight, but it also wasn't the worst fight. So there was like, that crowd was a little rough, but I think it was just because the day dragged on so long, man. And I can't imagine if your sole focus is just the fights, I would almost say at times it could have been torturous. You know, luckily there's like March Madness, other things that kind of distract you in between fights. But if you're there and your sole job is to sit there and watch fights, that was probably a rough night.
Yeah, because the main card started at 10 Eastern. And I think they were done around 1 a.m. And, you know, MMA is, I wouldn't say it's like the circus, but, you know, you can bring your kids. You can bring your girl. You know how we say it's a long night of fights, for one. So if you got there at, I think they kicked off at 7 p.m. Eastern for the prelims. So let's say you got there around 6, 6:30 to get in your seat, get some food going, all the way to 1. Like, that's pretty brutal. I mean, I don't want to harp on it. Well, I'm happy that they were out and about versus the Apex, but I understood how the way this card unfolded, these controversies, these eye pokes, things like that, and then a main event that just kind of fell flat. You know, I can understand why we're not, like, jumping out of our seats here as we, you know, cover it.
Yeah. No, that's, you're right. I mean, no sense on beating a dead horse, but yeah, it's so weird because it's something that I think we all kind of asked for, and then it just didn't play out. I don't know.
Joaquin Buckley defeated Vicente Luque. You know, if we're just going to be here picking at things, what was Luque thinking? Like, I realize the cover-up is a defense, but it just seemed like he was so content there. You know, like, I didn't see this one strike that put it on him for him to just kind of cover up. I don't want to say give up, because that dude's tough. Mm-hmm. He's been doing this for a long time. But it was kind of like this, ending to it all. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Like, I don't know what happened. Now, that said, I like to praise the fighter. The winning party here was Joaquin Buckley. But then at the same time, I'm sitting on the edge of my seat. Okay, you won. Oh, shit. This guy wants to go to St. Louis. Cool. Who's he want to fight? Oh, he doesn't want to give us a name. It's like, come on. It just, I could see a lot of old schoolers being frustrated.
That might have been part of our frustration. Because even when things kind of did go our way, we were like, what the fuck? Okay, so to me, we're in an era now when if a fighter sits there and covers up like that, to me, they're saying, I want out. Because there's just, we've already been told by the referees nonstop, if you don't fight back, they have no choice but to stop the fight, right? I don't think you could sit up and go, what the hell? Like, that was 3 years ago. This right. is different now. We all know. Same way, like, I can't see, you can't go, wait a minute, what are you doing? Like, we all know. If you say, I can't see, that fight's getting stopped. To me, if you sit there and you cover up like that, you're basically saying no mas, you know, without saying it. He's had problems too. Like, didn't he have the brain injury, right?
Luque, he did, yeah.
Yeah, maybe there's something to that, you know, reliving that. Like, oh my God, I don't want to go through that. I don't know. And then Buckley gets the mic. And it's like, I get it. You know, I get you're trying to get a sponsorship. You're trying to make some money. That part I understand. But there's so much more to this. And that's such a, like, throwing a dart at a wall or up in space. Like, focus on the next guy and what that could possibly give you, a reaction from a crowd. It just felt so flat, man. And I want to feel sorry for him. But at the same time, again, like, we've seen so many fighters go through this that you really have to have these things dialed up, and somebody in your corner needs to be there to remind you if you do veer off, this is what needs to be done. The same way that you'll see a hand pop into the screen and turn that monster logo or whatever, you know, you got to get these things done.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Bisping set him up twice for that.
Yeah. As well. When do you ever get so that?
It was plenty of opportunities. It was, I don't know, it was a little rough, a little rusty there on the production side, or just maybe the whole show, the way it came off. Did you see the one time when Derek, I didn't even know he translated French.
Me neither.
There. And Bisping's asking a question to Ferrol, which Derek's translating to her. She's answering in French, but then her guy's answering it to Bisping. And so little by little, you could tell Derek's like, I'm kind of not needed here. And he just shuffles his way out of there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, I would think that would just be buttoned up. Like, Bisping tells the guy, we got our guy. You know what I'm saying? This guy's going to do it. He's obviously a professional. He's going to say it like it is. That way someone on the team doesn't twist it or whoever. Which, who knows? Yeah. Maybe that guy was actually even doing better than Derek would have. Who knows? But it just looked a little awkward. So between that, the AC, well, I'll get to Weidman in just a second, and that whole fiasco. Dumas, you know, same thing. He got an eye poke as well. I don't know. Landwehr saying, you got to kick my ass. And if you do, you're in trouble. How about don't get your ass kicked? You know, like, what's at stake here? He was saying bizarre things. It was just a little bizarre. Then I don't even know if you know, but Brendan Fitzgerald was saying something and John McCarthy was checking him on Twitter, something having to do with the rule set or something. I don't know. That was kind of a mess as well.
Jeez. Yeah, it was an off night.
Big time. Let's get to Weidman. So I'm cheering for this guy, dude. That was a serious injury to come back from. He's been in a horrible run. He's lost his last 2, 4 of 5. He's a former champ. You know, he's used to kind of being at the top, and he feels like a few years have been stolen from him because of the injury. Now, that's partially true, but prior to the injury, he was also getting served up, too. It all started with that Luke Rockhold fight. And but that said, what I didn't like was that he and Silva both got stern warnings from referee Gary Copeland. Now, I think Silva had done it twice and Weidman once. But either way, Copeland chose to bring them both and say, this is a warning, a hard warning for both of you. Put your fingers down. What does Weidman do? The exact opposite. He kept keeping his hands out there. It's what he uses to parry and to maybe gauge his distance. But the fingers were out there. It was getting on my nerves, and I have no attachment to Bruno Silva. I bet on Weidman, but I think I was tripping because I thought, dude, you're going to get disqualified or a point taken away, and it could go down to this. Put your fucking fingers down. Mm-hmm. Make a fist or point them up. And no, he just kept doing it out there, almost like he was taunting Copeland to disqualify him right then and there. In the end, he wins the fight via 2 eye pokes. And I understood why Silva went down, because he got poked twice, and then I think he whacks him in the head with a follow-up. So he was just headed down to his knees probably anyway. And so once Weidman comes off and finishes him, it's over. Like, there is no, well, let's stop the fight. Can you continue? No, that part's over. So now the only thing that can happen is the ref can review. And New Jersey's one of the top commissions. They can review and then decide what to do. They can either disqualify Weidman, or they can elect to give it a no contest. Or so disqualify would mean he loses. Mm-hmm. Or a no contest, they can say that A, it wasn't intentional, or it was intentional, but we choose not to disqualify them. Now, I know that doesn't make sense. I had to ask John McCarthy about this a few times, because there's times where you could be throwing a knee up the middle, you miss the stomach, but your shin hits the cup. Well, you intended to do that, you just missed. But therefore, the referee can say it's not worthy of a disqualification. So, again, you can disqualify him and say, I warned you, but you did it. You're disqualified. You lose. You can say, I warned you, but I think in the process of throwing your hands, your fingers just got caught. I don't think you intended to do it that way. We're going to go to a no contest. Or they can do what they chose to do, which is they just said, we're going to go to the judges because we don't feel like, I guess they didn't feel like there was any fouls there. Or because first they called it a TKO. Then they said they went to the judges, which means they thought it was non-intentional. And so mm-hmm. because it was the third round in a non-title fight, once you get to the third round, they actually score that round too. And I think 2 minutes and 18 seconds had gone by. So they gave Chris Weidman the 10-9 there. What else are they going to do? He's the one that put the other guy down. So it was just bizarre to me. It was frustrating because it's not the Super Bowl or anything, but it's a fight that affected two people, you know. And it was a, and here's the other thing, that was actually one of the better fights, so that kind of ruined that as well. But yeah, I just didn't like that ending, man. I thought one guy really got screwed, and it was Bruno Silva.
Can you imagine if half of your paycheck just goes away over something that you don't even feel was your fault? Like, it's pretty crazy. And now on top of that, you got to take a Three Stooges poke to your eyes. Like, what more? I George, this night was so weird, man. And I was so mad for so many different reasons. I think even if you didn't like Chris Weidman, it's hard to root against his story at this point. And him being able to fire the leg the way he was, I was like, I was fired up. I was like, good for you. You know, like, wow, this, maybe all of us, you know, in our lives, like, you've had a knee injury. Maybe that motivates you, right? Maybe that motivates somebody else who's had a similar injury. Him being able to do that at a high level like that. Holy crap. What a moving moment. And he was showing glimpses of the old Chris Weidman. But the fight itself, those fouls were just, I was pulling my hair out. What are you guys thinking? And then his remarks afterwards just made zero sense to me. You know, he chose, it seemed like when they were hugging, when they were talking to each other, it seemed like they understood each other and they felt each other. Like, hey, we'll do this again or something. But then when he got the mic, he kind of like blasted him and said, well, it's your bad for kind of going down to the ground. But, well, motherfucker, this is like the third time you've been poked in the eyes. Like,
fourth.
But
fourth, and you ended with a 1-2 poke.
Yeah, you know? Both eyes, like, if both my eyes are poked, even if they're blurry for a second, I might do that. I might go to the ground because I'm not going to take a chance of standing, not being able to see, and just hope somebody doesn't hit me. Like, these are professional prize fighters. They hit hard. You can't.
Yeah, and it was partly the motion too. The momentum took him down. It wasn't just him collapsing to the ground, but it was Weidman's fingers, just the way he was sticking them out, almost like on purposely wanting to get disqualified, that it made me mad. And it made me mad that he was doing it, and it made me mad that the referee was not calling it. Mm-hmm. And then, sure enough, it had to do with the fight ending. And yeah, I usually agree with what Weidman said, and that was, you don't call timeout yourself, you let the ref do it. But in this case, right, it was so egregious, I understood Bruno Silva's point and why he did it, because it was two of them, you know? Like, he was really, really blinded. And so by then, Weidman, I think, had time to see how this thing ended, and he had to have an idea that he poked him. I mean, you can tell when your digit goes in someone's eye, I imagine.
Yeah.
I get that it had happened to him as well, but yeah, it was, it didn't come off well. I think Bruno Silva has a good chance. Usually they don't. Usually by the time they get to the commission, the appeal's just a waste of time. But I think he has a really, really good argument here. We'll see. In the past, the UFC's done a good job of saying, we're going to step up because of what, you know, what occurred or whatever. He is 1-5. So he's in an area where he could get cut. I certainly hope that this isn't what gets him cut, because he was fighting pretty damn good going into it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he was going to win. I'm just saying it was an exciting fight. But we're going to talk more about this on Spinning Back Click. Nolan King will be on the panel. He was at the event, so maybe we'll get more out of him. He connects a lot with the commissions. Plus, it gives us another day to see what's going to come out of this, to see if someone speaks up, because Bruno Silva's pretty pissed. He was doing some media after the fight, and he says, man, I'm really, really mad at the way this went down. I'm mad at the way Weidman kind of handled himself. So we'll see. But let's go over some of the other results so everyone gets an idea of what we put up with. Colin Lochran defeated Angel Pacheco. You know, that was a pretty good fight. I enjoyed it.
That was good.
Jacob Malkoon defeated Andre Petroski. Petroski, I think, hurt his rib somehow. Popped a rib. And so that fight just
kind of ended where
it was. Yeah, awkward ending. Ibo Aslan defeated Anton Turkoglu. Dennis Bazooka defeated Connor Matthews. So far I'm okay. But then that Herbert Burns strikes again. He, dude, this thing with flopping and his body language where he just looks like he tunes out, partially gives up. You know, when he's kind of like, he's actually really calm. And when he's fighting, he looks like, okay, this guy's probably got some skills. And then all of a sudden, he just kind of tunes out. You know, is the best way I can put it. I don't want to call him a quitter, although I think he's done that before. But I don't know. I don't know if he's got a future in the UFC because this is the second time I think I've seen him do what he did. It's kind of a little bit of a turnoff, but whatever. Lupi Godinez, I thought the fight was there for her to win, and Verna Jandiroba stole it from her. But I thought Lupi Godinez was going to be the one that maybe could keep it going. Remember, she won 4 in a row last year, four in 1 year. And it so just, she kind of threw all that away by, I thought, poor fight IQ.
I thought it was just one or two little battles, little moments that put her in rough spots where she lost that fight.
Yeah, I agree. And then the Kyle Nelson-Bill Algeo fight, look, it was probably going to end with Algeo getting lit up because he had gotten lit up, but he was standing and still moving his head and still throwing back and still covering up. Why they stopped it, I thought it was really too early, man. If you're standing and still kind of fighting, even though you've taken a few shots, I'm sorry, but that's what this is. It's a fight. And there's going to be some people that get rocked, but it doesn't mean they're done. So I thought it was a poor stoppage there.
I thought it was okay. I was okay with it, but my little bar or whatever, it was right there. You know, like it was the lowest that I would tolerate.
Yeah. And then Nursultan Rizabiov defeated Cedric Dumas. Look, I'm not too mad at this fight. I mean, obviously there was an eye poke there as well. I think the only thing that bothered me about that dude, because he looks like a mean dude. He's just a big, what is he, a welterweight or something like that? These guys are middleweight. He just looks like a big, nasty dude. But it doesn't match his voice. Remember the other day I was complaining that Jake Gyllenhaal is supposed to be this tough guy cooler in the Florida Keys. And he's got that real soft voice. Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
You know, like maybe one notch above Michael Jackson. And then this guy, he grabs the mic and he's got this annoying pitch to it, but he's an exciting fighter, so I'll tip my hat to him. I want to see more from him, but he's from Uzbekistan. He looks like he's a dangerous dude, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that, throwing Weidman, throwing the flat main event, throwing Buckley and Luque just not showing up, and Buckley phoning it in on the post fight, it was pretty frustrating all the way around, especially when you got great college basketball going at it, you know, side by side.
Mm-hmm.
That's our recap of UFC on ESPN. What was it? What I say it was 58 or something, 54. Bonuses, by the way, go to Landwehr and Bazooka. Bazooka, yeah, I think is how you say it. And then Ibo Aslan and Anton Turkelje, they got the fight of the night. We'll come back with some news, but first we got a couple guests. Linton Vassell, heavyweight now, former title contender at light heavyweight, and now heavyweight, and now fighting at the PFL. Let's catch up with him. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes catching up with all the big stars in the sport of mixed martial arts. Today we get to talk to Linton Vassell, who's got a big fight coming up at the first regular season matchup for PFL in 2024 against Dennis Goldsoff. So Linton's coming over, obviously, from the Bellator roster, taking part of the regular season. Linton, why did you come to that decision rather than maybe any of the other series? I guess they have, you know, the pay-per-view series. There's always the hunt to be the Ngannou opponent. What made you settle on the regular season?
So I'll tell you exactly what happened. I was supposed to fight Bader, which that didn't happen. I got sick in October. So then me and manager were saying, I'm going to fight him depending what happens between him and Ferreira. Obviously, he lost the fight. So I'm expecting, well, I'm going to fight Ryan next. I get a phone call saying that fight's not happening. Do you want to go into the PFL tournament? And this was about maybe 4 weeks ago. So that's exactly what happened. I didn't even get a chance really to decide on what I want to do, but I wanted to fight. I'd been training, so I thought, why not? And it'd be a year in March. Well, it's March now, but it's a year in March pretty much when I fought Moldovsky. So I can't be waiting around for Ryan or whatever fight could be lined up later.
Were you told why the Bader fight wouldn't happen? Because as far as I know it, even though it was a champions matchup, no belts were at stake. So Ryan's still the Bellator champ, I guess.
Exactly. So all I heard was he's not ready.
Oh.
That's it. He's not going to be ready till later on in the year. So I can't wait till later on in the year. That'd be nearly 2 years coming up. I need to earn money. I ain't getting older. I'm 40 myself.
Yeah.
So I understand. You know, if he's not ready, he's not ready. I'll move on. You know.
But the decision also requires a possible four fights in 1 year. Is 40-year-old Vincent Vassell, excuse me, ready to get down like that? Because it's all like within 6 or 7 months too.
I know what I'm putting myself into. How would I know unless I try? You know, I could always be like, oh, I'm not ready. But it's like, I could be like, oh, I'm 40 now, I'm not going to fight. But I feel I'm at my best right now. I've been winning, I've won my last five fights. It's not that I've been winning and it's going the distance. Out of five fights, one fight went the distance. So, and I've beaten these top guys. Two of the fights were supposed to be number one contender fights. Sorry, three. Tyrell Fortune fight was number one contender. I didn't get my title fight. They gave it to someone else. And then I fought Tim Johnson, number one contender fight. They gave it to someone else. And then I fought Moldovsky. I got the fight, but then I got sick. So things happen. I totally understand. But if I'm able to still fight at this age, still like beat these guys and dominate these guys, then why wouldn't I believe in myself that I can do this tournament and win it?
That ground and pound is some of the best I've ever seen.
Thank you.
Is it one of those where that's the sweet spot? Like, you know, all the game plan is now built around a situation like that, getting the fight to the ground and then unleashing and, you know, an offense that's hard to stop. Take me through like the evolvement of Linton Vassell as an athlete and where you are now.
So to be honest, I never used to do ground and pound in training, like on a bag or anything like that. I was all more of a submission guy.
Right.
So if you look at my wins back in the day, coming up from like heavyweight, I subbed everybody. And it wasn't until I saw Alistair Overeem, and he beat, I can't remember his name now, but he fought Tom Aspinall. Tom Aspinall beat him. And his ground and pound was vicious. And I said, that's what I need. I need that kind of ground and pound. So I'd already been doing my ground and pound, but I just added a little bit more relentless into it. So I trained pretty much most days doing the ground and pound, whether it be before training or after training. And I think over these last 5 years, it really has shown. So it really is my bread and butter now. I take you down, I'll beat you up. I'll go for some submissions, but I won't force it. And then usually the ground and pound comes from when, obviously, you know, they're either looking for a way out or I've landed some shots, good shots.
Is that now a better feeling to finish someone in that fashion than to maybe put them to sleep or break a limb, or which one feels better?
The ground and pound. The ground and pound. It's a different kind of feeling. It really is. I didn't expect to knock Moldovsky out with it. I think, like you said, it was the sweet spot. I caught him good. He was already dazed from the right hand and the other elbows. But yeah, I think it was just on the right spot, and everything worked out perfectly, to be honest.
Could getting through a regular season and winning the PFL title as along with the $1 million, could that replace the goal that you had of winning the Bellator heavyweight title?
1,000,000%. And yeah, so to be honest, it was a no-brainer. when they said you're going to fight in the PFL tournament, I said yes straight away. One, you get money, you get the status, and obviously you get the championship belt. So for me, it was a yes straight away.
Linton, with the acquisition and all that, we've spoken to a lot of fighters, and some of them feel like it's sort of a hard reset for them. Yes. But in your case, you're carrying a lot of momentum. Do you feel like that momentum gets to carry over, or is it one of those hard resets?
Nah, no reset, not at all. I think it would be a reset if I wasn't fighting once a year, but I've been fighting once a year since 2019, not from my choice, from Bellator not matching me up. So it's obviously working, you know. So yeah, that momentum's going to continue. You know, obviously, you got to fight smart. Can't be going in there looking to brawl and, you know, get all injured up. Like you said, it's an 8-week in between. So fight smart, but obviously go for the finish. And that's exactly what I'm going to be looking for.
Jeremy Kennedy told us something that kind of stuck in my head. And he was saying it's a relief to just kind of have new faces to study. Yes. You know, he's used to studying the same guys over and over, and now there's this new crop. And I kind of, to peel back the curtain a little bit before the show, we were talking a little bit about the Premier League. And sometimes you'll get players coming from other countries, and they'll come in the Premier League, and they'll just say it's so refreshing to see all these different players, how they play. It kind of gets you going, go. You, by the way, to peel back the curtain even more, we'd give you guys a million guesses. You'd never guess what the second topic was before the show. But back on this. Does that
Angelina Jolie, baby?
Right?
Angelina. Does that do that for you too? Like, you know, to kind of have new faces, new people to study, does it reinvigorate you?
Because I had this question earlier. And it really does, because like I said, I was number one contender. So if I didn't fight Ryan Bader, who was I gonna fight next? And it's pretty much PFL buying Bellator has answered my question. Now I've got a whole new roster to fight. So I think it's great. It's great for business. And it's definitely, should I say, excites me. It excites me anyway, knowing that I've got all these new opponents that I can potentially fight soon.
Is it hard not to think about Bader, Henan Fajeda, and Francis Ngannou? You got a tall task ahead of you to get through this season and get that milli, but you know, those are some big dogs that are sitting around too.
But I've got to get there first, so why am I going to think about people that I haven't even got to yet? I got Dennis. I've got to beat Dennis before I even get there, and then I've got to beat someone else and someone else. You know, it's, I think, as fighters, why are you thinking about things that are not there yet? You know, focus on the task at hand, and then you can focus about the next and the next and the next. You start focusing about Francis and Ferreira and Bader, you're not focusing on your opponent, and you're probably going to get beaten. I'm fully locked in with Dennis right now.
Okay. What happened last year? You said you were sick. Is it something you revealed? Was it serious or
COVID, mate?
Oh, okay.
But yeah, my friend messed me up big time. I've never been that sick before. I was in bed for about 5 to 6 days, and pretty much every time I'd try and get up and think, "Oh, I'm being a pussy," nah. it reminded me like, "Hey, you're not good." So I chose a smart decision to not fight. One, I wouldn't have probably got cleared anyway to fight. But two, I ain't putting myself through that. Like, me and Bader fought back in 2017. I would be stupid to think I could beat Bader being sick. And I'd waited all this time to get here. To what, ruin it just like that? To be like, oh, I'm not well, I'll still fight him, I can beat him. Say for instance, I didn't beat him, and then what? Oh, I was sick, I had COVID. You guys ain't gonna care. No one's gonna care. I probably wouldn't be in this tournament right now. I'd probably be sitting at home, licking my wounds, thinking, why did I do that? So I'm glad what I did, to be honest.
And you've been doing good with the rematches too. So I imagine the Bader is still on the radar.
Hey, right now he's not, because he's not in the tournament. So until that comes, you know, yeah. I think I focused a little bit too much energy on him from 2017. Ever since then, I wanted the rematch, and I finally got it. Things messed up, you know. It's just real bad timing. So that's all my me worrying about him. Now it's, like I said, now it's Dennis. I got Dennis to worry about.
I know it's an individual sport, but was part of you rooting for Team Bellator versus Team PFL a few weeks ago?
Yeah, 100%. I was Bellator, wasn't I? So I don't know where I am now, if I'm PFL or what. But yeah, obviously I was rooting for the Bellator boys. I've got Jason Jackson, and I got Impa as well. So obviously, that's like Impa. So I got Jason Jackson. So I was rooting for him. Impa's my teammate. So I was rooting for him for the PFL side.
Got it.
So yeah. Everyone else was Bellator, but I had one guy I wanted to win was obviously, you know, was Impa.
Did part of you wish it was you against Henan Fajeda there, just to go for the sweep or anything like that?
Yeah, I'd be stupid and lying to everybody if I said it wasn't. We all say, oh, I wish it was me. But at the end of the day, what happened, didn't it? You know, it wasn't meant to be. I think things happen for a reason. I got sick for a reason. So it's like, your time wasn't now. Your time's going to be right now, April 4th.
What do you think it is with older guys, and I say that with respect, I'm 54. So you're a young cat to me, but in the heavyweight division, you're 40, Bader's 40, Francis is going on 38, Stipe Miocic, I don't know if he's gonna fight Jones this year or not, he's 41 or something like that. But what is it, something about 35 is prime, between 35 and 40, knowledge and the physicality, the power is still there. It's kind of interesting how, you know, you guys are some of the best in the world.
I think it's the fight IQ, because you've got all this knowledge from previous fights that you've lost and also won. You listen to your body a lot more. I think when you're younger, you just run yourself into the ground. You just train every single day and don't take your rest. That's what I did anyway. I think as I got older, I started going to the chiropractor more. Getting my going to the cryo more, getting massages, getting my recovery, you know, just acupuncture. I wasn't doing that before. So you have to look after your body, and also you have to take your day's rest that you need. I think a lot of people underestimate rest is just as good as someone training, you know.
Yeah. And the last question, have you already been told, are the rules going to be the same where in the regular season you can't use elbows? And I bring that up because going back to your ground and pound savagery, you'll have to maybe not throw those.
No, that's cool, but you must have saw the post they put up today, right?
I did not. No, I'm sorry.
If you've ever looked, it's me versus Karatonov. No elbows, just ground and pound. Yeah, just ground and pound. Like, I totally understand the elbows are obviously more devastating, like you said, ambitious, but I've adapted to that. I just have to remember not to do it, but you know, I'm gonna be pretty dialed in, and remember, you know, get disqualified
if that happens. Because but,
so yeah, I'll be picking my shots to go for the ground and pound with knuckles.
Yeah, because when you guys are in fight or flight mode, I can't imagine, you know.
Yeah.
Are thinking everything through. That's why you see the occasional knee to the downed opponent.
No, I hear you. I hear
whatever.
You.
Yeah.
To be pretty honest, I think I'm pretty good like that. I haven't really done anything silly like that, knee to the downed opponent or nothing. I think the worst thing I've probably done is knee someone in the nuts. To be honest, I've never been penalized for doing an eye poke or something stupid like that, or knee. You know, it's like, well, I said, I'm focused, but I sort of know what I'm doing in the moment.
Linton, thank you so much for the time today. It was really cool to see your name pop up as one of the eight heavyweights that are going to fight this year, because that really freshens things up. And again, you, like my brother said, you carried so much momentum last year, you know, going into that title fight that didn't happen. Yeah. This maybe would allow you to pick up some paychecks along the way to get to that big prize, and maybe make up for some of that time that Bellator just didn't use you enough.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate that.
We'll talk to you soon, mate. Take care.
All the best, yeah. Thank you, boys.
I thought I had heard behind the scenes goes that it was COVID. I'm glad he confirmed it. I'm not glad he got it, but at least now I know why that fight didn't go down at Bellator 300. Remember the one in San Diego?
Yeah, that was unfortunate. But he made good points, you know, like, why would he fight like that, compromised, you know, especially after everything he's built up? He tried, you know, but being stuck in your bed for 4 to 5 days, that's just another beast, you know, of how your body is feeling for you to have to be like that and then expect to put it through a sprint. You just can't do that. And maybe it's an age thing. You know, he's a veteran now. I'm kind of glad he made that decision, though.
He's finished 4 of his last 5, and he is on a 5-fight win streak, so he takes a lot of momentum into this PFL season, and he hasn't fought as much, so this will be a chance to stay busy, get some paychecks, and at the very end, possibly fight for $1 million and that coveted belt that he seeks. Remember, he came up short against Newton, the guy that beat King Mo a couple times. Then I think King Mo bounced him from a tournament, and then he lost to Bader as well in the light heavyweight division. So just when he was getting ready to get Bader at heavyweight is when he got COVID. He's just had a little bit of bad luck, but he's a fun chat.
Was he Emmanuel Newton? Was that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember he threw like a spinning back fist and not gave King Mo his first loss, I think.
Yeah, I think he gave him another one too later on.
He gave him another one, yeah. Yeah. All right, thank you to King Mo for his time. And folks, we are going to be doing a UFC 300 watch along on April 13th for UFC 300. It is going to be a great night of fights. And I just thought of this right now, Go. So I'm kind of putting you on the spot.
You want to do the whole night, don't you?
Are we just going to do the whole night? Because have you seen how stacked it is? And, like, you know, I think there's fights that we wouldn't do that are better than some main cards that we've recently done, like that Toronto card.
Yeah. That's difficult because we have the pre-show. So basically I'd have to end the pre-show and then jump right into this.
We'll do the show with us the first few fights, and as we just watch the fights together, we can kind of preview the three of us, or even bring in someone else and just talk about what's gonna happen. We should just maybe keep our options open is all I'm saying, because that's such a deep card. Count on 8 Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, folks, for the 4 prelims and the 5 main card fights for sure. And then all together, there's an additional 4. And these are the ones we'd be missing. Jalen Turner and Renato Moicano, Jessica Andrade and Marina Rodriguez, Bobby Green and Jim Miller, Davison Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt. So we kind of don't want to miss those. Probably, you know what? I'm going to make it down in my notes right now. Tomorrow we got a call with the boss, and we should discuss this because I think we can get creative with it somehow.
Yeah.
All right, so that's April 13th. But yeah, count on the watch along, folks. And every Monday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, check out Spinning Back, Click, myself, and Goes, along with a couple of our colleagues. We unpack the biggest stories of the week. Usually it's 5, but we're kind of messing around with the format a little bit. So we welcome you guys to give us feedback. Those of you that watch us there, you can watch us live on YouTube and on Facebook. It's facebook.com/officialMMAJunkie or youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. Noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. You can watch us live on either one of those. Or if you're maybe blocked at work from social media, but for some reason sports websites are okay, you can always go through MMA Junkie and then you can watch us on the front page. Links are always provided there. So just trying to give you guys as many options as you want, or if you get home and you just want to watch it on replay, it's all available there on YouTube. You can watch it. When you're live, you can participate via the chat, leaving a question or a comment. The better ones obviously get priority. And lastly, it's also a podcast. So the same way you listen to this show here on Omni or at Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, any of the others, you can grab Spinning Backlick. I would say now that it's fresh on your mind, find it, subscribe. You'll dig it. I think you really will like it. All right, Goes. So The only other thing that I want to talk about, and then we'll get to Liz Carmouche, is UFC 302 was announced, right? It's going to take place in New Jersey, except this one isn't in Atlantic City. It's in Newark. They haven't really come up with a card because they're still tinkering with 301, and they got to get through 300, and I think anything that's still left over from 299 and 300, you know, might get turned around. This thing's in Newark, New Jersey. The last one, the fight night we're talking about right now, was Atlantic City, New Jersey. So two different spots, right?
Yeah.
And there's no main event. The only thing they've put together so far is Roman Dolidze against Anthony Hernandez, Eileen Perez versus Jocelyn Edwards, Grant Dawson versus Joe Selecki, Phil Rowe versus Jake Matthews, Mickey Gall versus Belil Hafez. So they got a ways to go, right? Oh, there's no main event or nothing like that.
They just this gave me the course. Appetizers.
Yeah, big time. Let's see here. June 1st is the date. So 300 is on April 13th. That's coming up here. 301 is the one in Brazil. I think that's like May 4th or something like that. And that one has Pantoja versus Steven Erceg. I can't believe I just said that. And UFC 302 has no main event. And UFC 303 is where apparently could be Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler. That's International Fight Week. That's on June 29th. So as legit as the UFC was at the end of 2023, putting 297, 298, 299, and 300, getting it working, they've been a little slow in the second quarter with 301 and 302. It's kind of a patch-up job as they get to 303.
Totally, but that's kind of the price we pay, and it's hard to be mad at the UFC because we're gonna get a crazy card coming up.
Yeah, I'm definitely not mad at them. I appreciate a lot of things that they do, and sometimes we do sound like sourpusses complaining about shit. You know, like I guess we did a little bit of it with the last fight night that we just discussed. I think more of that was basically on the fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you know, the UFC, when Dana White said this 15 years ago, we want to be right up there with the NFL. I raised the bar, and so my expectations are also high for them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When they don't meet it, then I feel like it's my job to call it out. And when they do, then I'll give them a pat on the back. 300 is a deep, deep card. I didn't even think they needed to make it that deep. I think some of that talent could be on 301 and 302, to be tell you.
Yeah, for sure.
To be honest with you. But they really wanted to do something. Maybe it's the makeup because UFC 200 kind of wasn't what they wanted as well, if you'll recall. Maybe they're making up for that. I don't know what it is. I don't think it'll make a difference. Like if you remove Marina Rodriguez and Jessica Andrade and say, hey, you two head on down to Brazil and just fight in May. I don't think there's going to be this dip in pay-per-view sales. If you tell Cody Garbrandt and Davison Figueiredo, hey, Brazil needs that guy. Get on down there, Cody, with Figgy, right? Get on that Rio card. They kind of need you. Again, I don't think the pay-per-views are going to take a dip. Like the pay-per-views are going to sell because it's an epic card and there's just a ton of talent. But I'll take it.
Yeah. But then again, you know, we've often talked too, like, what if Davidson had family members that are coming to Vegas or, you know, fans of Cody Garbrandt that are expecting it to be here. And so I think there's like a time limit to as to when you can do that. But I felt like they could have at a certain point done some of that.
Well, I just think someone could have pointed that out. They say they huddle up every Tuesday in the war room on Matchmaker Day. And you got Sean Shelby, who's been doing this for 20 years. Dana White, been there just as long. This Hunter Campbell guy is pretty sharp. Mick Maynard's been a promoter and now a matchmaker for quite a few years. You know, like someone's got to catch this, I imagine, no?
Yeah.
It's not a hill I want to die on. I'm not worried about it. 300's dope. We'll be here for it. And remember, on Thursday, I think we'll have some information for you guys in terms of what the watch along will look like. So yeah, UFC 302 recap of the stuff that happened in Atlantic City. A lot of that you can grab from the site. Let's get to our next interview. Liz Carmouche. Again, she's going to be fighting an old foe, Juliana Velasquez, at PFL 1 2024 on April 4th. These fights go down on a Thursday. Make a note of that. They're starting on a Thursday. And remember, the PFL likes to go back-to-back weeks. So PFL 1 is Thursday, April 4th. PFL 2 is Friday, April 12th. And PFL 3 is Friday, April 19th. The cities they'll be visiting is San Antonio, Las Vegas, and Chicago. Let's get to Liz Carmouche. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back. We always deliver the big names. Bellator flyweight champion Liz Carmouche joins us here on the program. However, she's taking a different route from some of the other champions. She'll be part of the PFL 2024 regular season, and she's got a scrap coming up. She's part of the first week of the regular season on April 4th. You can watch the fights on ESPN+. She's fighting Juliana Velasquez, a familiar name. Girl Rilla, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
Good. Thank you. First things first, why did you choose this route versus the Bellator Champion Series, which features the champions, a champion defending on every card for the next eight cards as Bellator is kind of, you know, folded over to PFL?
I wouldn't say that I chose. I would say that they said that here's an opportunity. It's a great opportunity. They didn't know what they were going to be doing with the females outside of this tournament. And to me, it was a no-brainer to have a belt in another organization to work for $1 million. That's the most women ever get. So I'd be stupid to not go for a run for it.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, that seems like a slam dunk answer. You get to stay busy, too. Is that something you want? A potential four fights? Not in a year. This thing's like in 7 months. Is that something you want to do? I mean, it sounds like it, obviously.
Yeah. You know, when I started off my career, I think the first year I had 8 or 9 fights. And I thought that that's what the fighting temple lifestyle was. So when it started to slow down, I'm like, I don't really like this. I'm in the gym 24/7, 365 days a year. I'll take a day or two off here, but I don't take vacations. So having a goal set every 2 months is perfect for me to just focus on the things that I need to whenever I'm in training camp.
What about weight cuts and recovery? How will those affect you?
Yeah, I guess part of it is going to be, we'll have to see, right? 125 is absolutely an intense weight cut, and it definitely sucks for me. I get it done, I go out there and I perform. But it's just a matter of trying to stay healthy. I have absolutely come back from it. And Monday, even after I fought on Saturday, had training partners that had fights coming up and they needed my help. So I came back right away, even if I was beat up from the fight. So I know I can do it. It's just a matter of playing it smart every single time and going out there and getting those quick finishes.
Liz, because you've fought in so many organizations under so many different circumstances, is this like another day, another fight for you? Or is there something that kind of motivates you in the sense that it's a different format? And like you said, another belt for that collection.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that are motivating me. The potential for $1 million, that would help my family and I so much, right? That's more money than I've ever seen. Two, just to have like another belt, I finally achieved getting a belt, to have an opportunity to go for another one. That's really exciting. To have a tempo that I can consistently know what the fight season is going to be. It's not a guess. I'm not going back to the gym, just trying to grow myself. And it's just kind of haphazardly. I don't really know what's going on. I have something to focus on. And that makes getting back to the gym so much easier. I'm going to be there anyway, but at least like I know what I'm working towards. And then the rule set for PFL with the point system and understanding, I know that somebody's not ranked number 2, number 1, number 3, just because they're a fan favorite, just because they are pretty, they have 1 million followers on Instagram. I know that if they're ranked there, it's because they earned it and they finished their opponents and they progressed to the tournament the right way. And that is something I can get behind.
Do you feel as though, even though this is taking place in the PFL, you still kind of have that people look at you as you're representing Bellator in a way?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that for a lot of the women that are coming over from Bellator, we absolutely have to represent. We're coming in and we have to show the strong skills we're able to bring over. And they've stacked it so that it's going to be difficult to do that. But I think that all the women are going to go out there and show just how much growth we've had in Bellator and how talented the division was.
Now, you're a veteran. I'm sure when you look at that list of women, you kind of have a good understanding of who's who and who's done what. Do you in your head kind of already know, all right, it's going to be me and her at the end, or these four at the end at least?
I mean, I'd like to think that I have a pretty good idea, you know, talking over the coaches, my own just studying of tape and stuff, put together kind of a good idea of who could be in the finals and who could be progressing through the tournament. But one thing that I just learned that it just didn't even cross my mind is if for any reason you take too much damage in the fight, then you don't get to progress to the tournament. You may potentially come back later, but then you have to finish in the first round immediately, right? To be able to continue on. So that definitely changes things. Cause I know some fighters are more of a brawler and they're used to taking damage, but if they take too much, even if it's that they win and they seem mostly healthy, they get suspended, and that changes the whole dynamics of how the tournament plays out.
Liz, how much of a factor is just being in a new organization with new personnel, new people around you, new surroundings, new cage, all that stuff? I kind of liken it to when you just go to a new school, you know, the first day is just kind of weird, right? Some of the same people, but, you know, not all of them. What do you think that's like, and does that ever hit you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love the opportunity to get to meet new personnel, to connect. And I mean, the PFL's done such a good job of bringing different media out to do all the different recordings in leading up to the tournament. So I've got to meet so many different faces. And for me, that's just an opportunity to connect. It's one of the things I love about MMA is I wouldn't meet any of these people. Like, I would just live in the gym. If I fought and it was just one-on-one with an opponent, like similar to COVID, I wouldn't meet any of these people. I wouldn't get to travel and connect with new ones. So I love that. And unfortunately, I didn't get to change a lot of schools. I changed a lot of schools when I was really little. And then by the time that like middle school hit, I was at the same school. So I didn't get that experience of like trying new things. But that's why I signed up for the Marine Corps too, was to meet new people and see new parts of the world. So I love it. To me, it's an exciting opportunity.
So I just wanted to tell both of you, I apologize for ducking out for a second. I'm fighting a cold and I had a sneeze attack hit me there for a second. But Liz, I wanted to go back to a fight. Goz and I have been covering the sport for a long time. So we saw the buildup towards you and your friend slash teammate, Elie Mallet. And then there's a great picture of you two afterwards. What was it like? I think this is a great teaching lesson. We'll say there's a lot of fighters that won't fight each other that are friends. And it's, you know, either it's ruined the relationship or it's caused problems with the promotion. You two were able to pull it off. It was a fun fight to watch. And I saw smiles between two prize fighters at the end. But what was it like that night and since then?
Yeah, it's been, I'd say, the same since then, right? You absolutely hear about so many different stories about a gym splitting apart and the coaches splitting, whether it's anticipation of the fight or some drama that happens and there's animosity there, or because they fight against each other and the coaches don't know what to do when it's both their fighters, you know, losing friends, all that. For us, it was the same. Like, she always throws a luau after fights. And so my family and I went to the luau after. We partied with her. I apologized for her leg. She get, you know, just nothing but reassurance that her leg was fine. I just hit that nerve cluster, no damage to the knee. And that same thing in support of each other, just reaching out and just seeing if we're okay, if we need any help. Nothing has changed for us. And I think that part of why that happened is just who we are as people. We've done nothing but support each other in our careers. Whether it was Shark Tanks and just trying to mimic the opponents to prepare each other and have to go hard with each other and anybody else, or whether it was going to each other's fights to help corner and do anything we needed to help the other person succeed. So I think because of that support that we had for each other and wanting the best for our careers, even knowing that that could mean that one day we're fighting each other, I think that that's what really helped in the end and kept our relationship the same.
And this is a brilliant answer, by the way. And like I say, I think a lot of young fighters can learn from this. So one last follow-up. What would be your advice to a situation that's brewing? Do you talk about it early and say, this is what we're going to do if and when we get there? Or do you just not deal with it and because of the stress and say, if we get there, then we'll talk about it? Like, what's your advice?
It's going to be that typical, right? Communication is key. I think for some people, if they're the type that need to avert themselves away from situations in general for fight camps, then that's probably what's going to work best for them. For Alima and I, we knew from the get-go, like when I was in the UFC, I had asked her, I was like, hey, why don't you fight for the UFC? She's like, Bellator takes care of me. I have a good home right here. I love the staff. I get paid well. Like, I have no interest in doing all the hoops and everything that you jump through. And there were different tournaments and opportunities where we were competing potentially against each other in the finals or something, and it just didn't work out. So we knew that it was just a matter of time. And we were just like, hey, we would always say it every tournament came up. The coach would be like, hey, if you guys get in the finals, do not compete against each other. Let the promoter know, walk away from it. And the moment they walked off, we're like, we're going to do this, right? And it was just this unspoken agreement that we would go out there and we'd give it all that we had against each other. And then as we went, it looked like I was going to get into Bellator. We talked about it and she's like, hey, there's nobody else I'd rather lose my belt to than you. It's a friend, somebody that I love. That's who I'd want to be able to pass down and to step away from the fight. That didn't happen. So we knew that there would be a chance for us to fight. It was just under different circumstances.
You know, what's pretty cool about the longevity of your career is we're learning a lot. Like, in the men's lower weight classes, a lot of the younger fighters, a lot of the lower weight class fighters, they start to hit their peak at 35, we'll say, you know, and whereas the heavyweights, some of them can still smash at 40. It's almost like that's their prime. So I feel like we're learning a lot through your career just because you've done so much for so long. But can you tell us, as you talk to a lot of your contemporaries, your colleagues, your former foes and now friends or whatever, what seems to be a prime age for the female athlete?
You know, when it comes to women, I think we're still trying to figure that out. You know, one huge factor that comes into it is the preservation of reproductive organs, right? When you do all these weight cuts, even if you do the minimal amount of weight cutting, you're still putting your body through undue stress that inhibits a lot of women's ability to bear children. So I think for those that want to go that route, they have to do things differently, and that's going to shorten their lifespan. For those that do have kids and still get into the sport, I don't see them usually fighting late into their late 30s and their 40s, right? I think we'll really have to start looking at all the different factors, and I definitely think that children is one of those factors that plays into it. For myself, my wife was able to have our sons, so I didn't have to, so I'm off the hook in that area. We made the agreement. I don't have to do that. So I get to kind of play with my body more and push it to its limits and let it play out longer.
Well, like I say, an incredible career almost spanning two decades, and we congratulate you. I know that a few of the fights early on that were big fights for you might not have gone your way, but man, you've really turned it around. Now you got title defenses. Now you have a chance to add another one. And I'm not in any way clowning by the first part of my statement. Even Tom Brady lost a few Super Bowls. He won a lot, right? But he lost a couple as well. So, but it's just really been incredible to follow your journey. You never gave up on yourself, and now you have a chance to yet plant another flag, you know, in PFL, similar to what like Chris Cyborg did, just capturing belts in different promotions. I see something pretty similar here, you know, in your career.
Yeah, she's definitely, I would say, somebody that in that fashion that I look to as far as what I should be able to try and do with my career and what I want to mimic. And so I see that. I'm like, man, if she can do it and she's been doing it longer than I have, I've got to chase those opportunities.
For sure. All right. Well, thanks, Liz, for the time. We really appreciate it. And good luck against Juliana Velasquez on April 4th. PFL regular season gets launched. The women's flyweights are featured on that fight card. As always, we hope to catch up with you throughout your journey here, you know, and it seems like it's going to be quite frequent here in 2024.
Thank you. That's the plan.
To be exact, the fights are going to be on The Deuce. ESPN2, to me, it seems like it used to be a bigger deal years ago. Is it still a big deal? Am I just getting old, or did it kind of just become an actual regular channel because the popularity of streaming?
I think it's still a big deal because there are certain things that you even like will drop to ESPNU. You know, sometimes you got to cross that. I think there is an ESPN3, if I'm not mistaken. That I think that's only online. So yeah, I think because ESPN2 means at least you're going to be on TV, and then after ESPN2, it's your streaming, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, they are going to be on ESPN2 for for PFL week one. So it's going to be ESPN2 and ESPN+. I'm sure that works for the prelims and the main card. But I got used to seeing PFL on a lot of ESPN last year, and I was happy for them. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that helps them out. And that continues this year. I think that's a big deal for them to be on the sports leader, you know? Yeah. And they really, really did a great job by acquiring PFL, or I'm sorry, Bellator, and some of their talent is actually on this season's rosters. So I'm backing them. You know, if they're strong, then they'll push the UFC to be strong. And we'll see how it goes for them. All right, folks, we're going to get on out of here. Thank you so much for tuning in to our Sunday night, Monday morning show. And don't forget to check us out on Mondays for Spinning Back Click, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. If you forget all the stuff I told you about Facebook and YouTube, you can go to MMA Junkie. We always provide the links to everything we're doing there. Just look for Spinning Back Click, and we'll see you there. And if not, we'll see you on Thursday for another Junkie Radio show. Take care. Go out and be a champion.